Which one?
Yeah.
All
right.
Two.
No, stop. Are we ready?
And that's the cold open.
Yeah, I guess so. Are we ready, though? One.
Two.
Are you fucking kidding me?
And that's the cold open. All right. I'll do it right this time, I swear.
One.
Two.
No. God damn it.
This counts as assisted suicide if I kill myself. You're going to jail for this. Let the record show.
Okay. All right. Leave.
Take a breath, big boy. Yeah. One.
Two.
Three.
Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Faking Movies. It's episode 270. You're joining us. We're so giddy because we're still on a high from last week's episode that we totally already recorded in order, and we're not doing this out of order at all.
We did. We did. Yeah.
God, it was really good. I forgot.
It was
what
really...
a wonderful week. Any week when we get to talk about movies that we actually enjoy.
True.
You know. No spoilers, because it's not a spoiler because it already came out and we already recorded it. Mm-hmm. But That's true. Do like the Magic Mike movies. Of course, this week, keeping that fun rolling, we didn't do that at all. We did a normal episode that I'm sure we're all going to be miserable and mad at each other by the time we're done.
Oh, I don't think so.
Actually,
this one
weirdly,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
Foreshadowing.
Always thank you to Marielle, and thank you especially for being here last week.
All right. Uh-huh. I remember
let
that.
Let me I have a question to
in
ask
the past.
Guys. Yeah. I have a question before we get started with the business for this episode. I think it's relevant. And I've been thinking about it for a couple hours at least now.
You're prefacing this way too much.
I really wanted to get your guys' take on this. If I poured coffee into my cat's water fountain, would it filter it back into water?
Probably not. I mean, not really.
When you do this thing, I get the range of emotions. My first one is, that's very funny. My second immediate one is, I hate you. And then my third one is, okay, that is kind of funny.
I want to give you a little peek into my life. I asked my partner this a few hours ago, and she is in another room working out, but she can hear me, I guess. And she just texted me and said, are you fucking kidding me? Because...
So we're all on the same page there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm like, you know, I'm the kid nobody likes. That's my job in the friend group. So Seth, you say no. Zach, what about you?
Now, I've done some chemistry in my life. Hard no. No.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't want to waste coffee, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to do it if it's not going to work.
I don't want you to waste your cat's lives
exactly.
on
and
this
also,
experiment. Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I want to see how good the filter is.
Not that good.
Yeah, probably not good.
Is there
at
a
all.
Filter out there that is good enough?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, absolutely, yes, but you would just need you'd need to pack a column with a bunch of different
fine-grained shit. Yeah.
Right. Mm. Very, very different components. Probably start with just charcoal, and then you do one cycle, and then the next phase, you do a finer grain charcoal and do a next filter. And
You could distill it. That's not filtering per se, but it accomplishes the same thing.
You could do your cat water through a Kofi filter, which is one of the filters that is used for making scotch. Certain scotches.
Sure. Okay. Well, you know, let me know how it goes.
Oh. Okay. Well, I do have
$50,000 later.
Yeah. I do have a Soxhlet extractor up on top of a bookshelf.
Of course you do. Off screen
right now.
Yeah.
So
it's off screen for everyone listening, no matter where it is. You don't happen to have
the much easier side of this equation, a cup of coffee handily, but do you?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Then we'll get back to you at the end of the episode, I guess. Sure.
Okay. Well, it's going to take me a little bit to set up.
I'll be back. No.
I'll be back.
Oh, we've done it. Pantomiming, getting up and dancing. Okay.
It's so nice to be back. I just got a new work computer, and it's a Windows. It's so nice to be back on Apple. It's so nice to be on Zoom, where they do me the fucking favor of, like, putting up a filter to help out with all the blotches and the terrible lighting I'm sitting under. I feel like a fucking superstar right now. And all day long, I was like a pink glowing ghost. Like,
I feel like, hearken back to, Baron Harkonnen, of course, and also our Halloween episode with Ghostface Killer, but you know, which ghost, but
came
still,
out. Already?
Probably, without a doubt.
Because we've already recorded it, and it's we're doing this in real time.
Does? Yeah.
Every episode comes out live. I don't know if everybody knows that.
Oh, shit. I didn't.
Regardless, I think that Windows has a vested interest in making people look worse and more miserable at all times.
Yeah.
I don't get it, but hey. Yeah. Speaking of which,
killed it again. Should we restart the episode?
One,
two.
Oh, now you can count, you son of a bitch.
15th tries a charm.
Yeah. Did anybody got anything they wanted to talk about, or should we jump in?
I don't think so. Our explanation is going to take a while. So.
Oh, I forgot to draw it, Zach. Do you want me to try to draw it right now?
I'll try. If you want, I think the explanation should be self-explanatory.
Draw, and I'm not going to complain about that. Uh-huh. What I'm going to say is, my movie this week, I'll point out.
I can't find a pen, but I do have some Taco Bell Diablo sauce. Do you think
Taco Bell
Diablo sauce on a post-it note?
Expensive chemical filter. Old cup of coffee, Diablo sauce, no pen. A thing people have on their desks.
I have post-it notes, though.
Yeah, that's not much use without a pen. Unless
halfway,
you want
to
make a cool
halfway to writing something down, yeah.
Counterpoint, I can create a pretty cool set of paper scale armor out of these post-it notes.
Yes, yeah. for sure.
That's true. So. I'll get into title and things like that in a second. But you say
I'll just use blood. I can use blood. That's
great.
Fine.
Smart. Drawing the plot, I assume, is what you mean.
Yes.
My movie that I did is very... Why do you have mercury on your desk? You know, I don't care.
Why didn't you eat it already? I would have eaten it.
I would have at least swished it around for a second. So my movie is like pretty formulaic, I think. But I do have a really long preamble about when I was trying to predict what this movie was in my head. Oh. And that feels to me very thumbtacks and pieces of string.
Mm-hmm. Pepe Silva.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So I guess I'll jump in with that while Seth is doing something. So
trying to draw out the plot of the movie.
Sure.
Well, first you have to draw out the blood from your body.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's no problem. You know how many knives I have on my desk.
That's true. You just secrete it, I thought, generally.
I'm going to be like Lee and pockmark my lips a whole bunch. And then,
poke them a little bit so they get swollen and then bleed a little bit. It's great.
Yeah.
Drink some blood milk. Great's a word for that. Yeah.
I'm faking a movie this week, and the name of that movie is Predestination. Mm-hmm. Now, sure enough. When you sent me this, you also put in parentheses 62% chance of this being a Final Fantasy movie.
Right. So this is the thing I'm going to start doing, just so that when we do do another one, I'm going to just fake you out for months, and then you'll just start ignoring it, and then finally we're just going to blast you with one. Oh,
it's like Lee and I did that for Johnny Carpenter.
Carps, except I'm a dum-dum, and I just forgot literally the second we were done recording. But
yeah.
Yeah, Lee really fucked us on the last one by pre-guessing it. So I'm trying to fuck with him.
So we'll Zach, that's fair. It does disappear a fart in the wind.
I will say your strategy is incredibly effective because I've already decided it's not a fucking Final Fantasy movie.
You've already
beaten it out of me. So
I don't yet have a rubric for how I'm going to rate these. It might be random, but it might not. I guess we'll find out.
I guess you beat the 38% odds, so good on you.
You won this time. House does not always win.
Predestination, which stars Ethan Hawke, Sarah Snook, Noah Taylor, and Dick York, parentheses, yes, that Dick York. Correct. So, here is the point in the show where I'm going to read a very long series of... kind of stream of consciousness about what I thought this movie might be. Okay. So
that's Baron Harkonnen back to our original orientation towards this whole thing, which was trying to actually do the film.
And I didn't really end up writing that kind of movie, but this was just my thought process because I decided it was how I was trying to work my way to an idea because I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do. So, okay.
Certainly.
Since I know that Dick York, aka First Darren from Bewitched, shout out to friend of the show Daniel, who did a Bewitched biblical movie for the movie Ghost years ago. First year of the podcast. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, so, I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Dick York, aka First Darren, died in the early 90s or late 80s. I forget. I assume that this movie is fairly old for our purposes and features a very young Ethan Hawke and Sarah Snook, you know, the Shiv Roy, of course.
Who is younger than us, so it can't be that old.
Well, I mean, we were born in the 80s. That's true. So a very young Ethan Hawke and Sarah Snook and a kind of young Noah Taylor, although... I don't actually know how old he is. I think maybe he just has a lot of sun years on his face.
Yeah, he's got Brit face, which really is a very wide range.
He's Australian. And that brings me to my next point.
Right, okay.
We have a young Sarah Snook and a Noah Taylor. I just assumed this is an Australian movie. And since they're both Australian, and, you know, because Noah's sun-adjacent look... So,
Sarah was Australian. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Who are some Australian directors? This, I don't think, isn't an auteur-driven movie, so it's not George Miller.
Yeah, right.
It's not Baz. I think that would
be rough.
It's not named the literal thing. It's Elvis or Romeo plus Juliet. Yeah.
I like one of those movies. I don't think... It's a Peter Weir movie, but this title would be perfect for like a dreamy Peter Weir walkabout movie.
Sure.
You know, a movie kind of like Walkabout.
I was about to say, exactly like Walkabout.
Which is actually a Nicholas Rogue movie, and he's British, so we can skip that. There's also like Oz horror directors like James Wan or the very different Jennifer Kent. Or like the new metal sci-fi action Australian directors like Alex Proyas. I don't even think it's an Oz comedy, so it's not directed, I'm assuming, by Paul Hogan or PJ Hogan or Yahoo Serious.
We get it. You fucking Wikipedia a bunch of movies occasionally.
I didn't.
Jesus.
I knew all these things off the top of my head because I watch a lot of Australian cinema.
Right.
I
definitely wasn't just making jack-off motions.
Yeah. Wank, wank, wank.
No, it's none. I don't think it's any of these things. I'm going to guess that this movie is a little more anonymous in terms of style, in which case I'm going to guess that it was directed by Philip Noyce. That's not to say that he's a bad director. It's just that he makes a little bit of everything. Like he made Jack Ryan movies, and he makes police procedurals, and he makes adaptations of beloved novels about life on the outback.
Seth, do you ever get the sense that Lee wishes our podcast was more serious than it actually is?
Yeah, it kind of does seem...
I think we're sitting in one of those right now.
Well, speaking of stories about...
You best be interested in a more serious podcast, Zachary.
We are in one.
You're in one. I don't know why I did it with that voice. That's not the right voice.
It's fine. Speaking of movies about life on the outback, Predestination. This is the route I actually went.
We've arrived. Okay. That wasn't as long as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I thought you were really going to do some Priscilla Queen of the Desert shit. Yeah. And just all over the place. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
All right. So Ethan and Sarah are two kids on a ranch in the outback. Dick York is
like the opening of Rescuers Down Under.
Yeah. Except there's two kids and a grandpa instead of a mom.
And there's not a giant eagle or an echidna friend.
Or a goanna named Joanna.
Ah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who really loves eggs.
She does love eggs.
So there are two kids on a ranch. Dick York is the grandpa who raises them. The ranch is struggling because there's a lack of water, and Dick doesn't know what to do. One day the kids are out playing, and they run across a drifter, Noah Taylor, who claims to be a dowser.
Cool.
They bring him home, and Dick is immediately suspicious, but he agrees to let him...
Because it's a fake thing?
Because I'm going to hold a Y-shaped stick and point you towards water.
It's not always Y-shaped. That's just the one that we usually associate with dowsing.
That's the trope, Lee. Thank you.
Yes.
All right, cinema sins. Get off my ass.
Ding! Seth said he didn't have a pen on his desk. Who doesn't have a pen? Sin one. Ding! Seth doesn't know that dowsing rods can be a different shape. Sin two. Cinema sin sucks.
Yeah, it does.
I feel like that's a dead horse at this point, though.
Yeah.
The world has turned on them. All right, so Dick is suspicious. He agrees to let him stay on as long as he helps out and actually earns his keep.
Sure.
So in the meantime, Noah keeps telling the kids that he needs someone to pass his knowledge on to, his dowsing knowledge, because all down under dowsers are predestined to find someone to share their knowledge with someday. And he doesn't have a family of his own. So... from there, we're going to get more or less a feel-good, light family drama of all these people coming together to survive on rough terrain and harsh conditions. And in the grand tradition of lots of Australian movies about the outback, there will be no people of color in this movie because, Australia has a very complicated history with their Aboriginal populations.
They sure do.
And their movies certainly don't like to talk about it most of the time until... recently, honestly.
Until recently, and it's been very prevalent. And they always have a bumper up top that says, like, some of this might be offensive to Aboriginals, because it's always talking about the bad shit.
Again, counterpoint, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Oh, they do.
There is that sequence, where they do hang out.
There's other awful racist stuff in that.
Yeah.
And not everything is great. In any of the sequences, but it's still like a very nice landmark case where
I will also bring up the example of Crocodile Dundee. Mm-hmm. The one thing I will counter with in those, they're not central characters. True. It's still cultural tourism at that point.
True. Yeah.
They do one scene and you're like, check that box. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or so, like, well, we mentioned Nicholas Rogue's Walkabout earlier.
Right, exactly. Right.
That is a very good counterpoint to the thing I'm saying. Like, that is about non-white people surviving in Australia.
Right.
With but I mean, there is a white character as the audience surrogate, though.
True. True. But so it's far less token usage.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Then of course there's The Cars That Ate Paris, and that movie just fucking rules, but you know.
True.
Zach, you should watch this movie.
Okay, well, Cars That Ate Paris sounds thematically way too close to Holy Motors, and my brain just shut down when I thought
immediately.
So it's an outback town named Paris, and they like booby-trap the town so anyone driving through, their cars get destroyed, and then they like have crazy monster cars. It's fucking awesome.
Whoa. Mad Max meets Paris, Texas.
Peter Weir.
No, not really.
Yeah, actually. Peter, yeah, Peter Weir. Paris, awesome. Texas. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
It is a Peter Weir movie, yeah. Okay, so we've got this feel-good, light family drama. So the kids keep following Noah around and like learning the knowledge, as he calls it, which I know is what London cabbies call their thing, but
having
I just know
everything about London. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm also going to use that term. You know, Liz 2's dead. I don't think we're going to get any complaints. Grandpa
Charles is too stupid to sue us. Is that the implication?
He doesn't listen, you know.
Yeah,
he can't work the buttons on his iPhone with his fingers because they're too chubby.
Joe Rogan podcast. such a dick, that guy.
I think he probably also listens to a lot of like Dale Carnegie on audiobook, How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's like, why doesn't anyone like me? I'm the king. Like,
I'm 70 and everyone still hates me.
Mummy, where's my mummy?
As he says that to his a flower for Emily or whatever the hell it is, corpse in the attic.
Oh, he has a rose for Emily, corpse in the attic?
Right. Dear God. Ooh, it'd be really hard to add a corpse to your mother when she's the fucking queen.
I don't know. I feel like they could just find another old lady and put her in the ground. And then,
yeah, because they would have just
found... Or vice versa, because Chuck is stupid, so they just put some old dead lady in the attic, and he's like, yeah, that's probably Mom. Okay.
That's a good plan. That's a good plan.
Mommy, why don't my fingers work?
Mommy, no one wants Camilla to be the queen of the people. Actually, do they even care about Camilla anymore?
Nobody gives a shit.
They don't care
about
any of it anymore.
Are there still Diana stans that like hate Camilla?
I don't know. I did watch an episode of MasterChef Australia. Back to Lee's movie, from, I don't know, like 10 years ago or something, and Prince Charles like showed up and was the special guest star or whatever.
That's fucking wild.
Right, well, so
they,
like
they sent him to like Curacao as like punishment, right? So this is just another one of those.
Like, well, there's like royal tours and stuff where they go and they visit all the countries in the empire, you know, like,
and MasterChef is super super popular and it's pretty good, and so like they sent him. And, like, even in the Australian broadcast, they had to subtitle him because he was proper. He was like, Linda, that's the most delicious canapé I've ever had in my life. The caviar was like...
Well, I mean, it must be strange having food that's seasoned based on what we've seen of the royal family's recipes.
He wasn't like, do you have any chicken fingers and mashed potatoes by any chance?
No, they did.
What is this exotic seasoning?
Pepper. It's black pepper.
No, see, here's the thing, though. They did British, former, like, his mother's coronation dishes.
Oh, they made that disgusting chicken curry. Like,
mayonnaise chicken curry,
So they forced all of these people that are, like, actually good chefs or, like, are in the process of becoming really, really competent cooks.
Yeah.
They made them cook all of that stupid, shitty British food. And then Prince Charles is like, oh, gosh, I can barely eat it because my fingers are too large to fit in my mouth.
You know, Chucky, you don't have to stick the whole hand in your mouth when you're eating.
But that's the way Mummy always did it.
She said forks are too dangerous for baby. Only the spare gets to use forks.
And look how he turned out.
He went to murder in America.
Man, fuck those people. They're the worst.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you know, the entire British Empire still pays them taxes. And
fuck those people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I get in on that. I guess I should watch King Ralph again. So the whole royal family has to get electrocuted in a freak photography accident, but I also have to have already been related to them. And Peter O'Toole needs to pretend that he's not ahead of me because he's afraid to become king. I don't think I can pull this off, guys.
It's a lot.
It's probably also true that Peter O'Toole doesn't want people to stick their fingers in his mouth to feed him.
That is part of it. That is compulsory. Yeah, you have to do it.
I love Peter O'Toole. He's like number two for me on favorite actors.
Oh.
Favorite male actors. He's like number three overall.
Jamie Kennedy, Peter O'Toole.
No, it's Gene Kelly and Judy Garland.
Oh, I thought Bam Margera would be in there at some point. Just not.
Harlan Williams, Tom Green, everyone else in Freddy Got Finger.
You are conjuring an era for sure. Yeah. Woofers.
All right. So the kids are following Noah around, collecting, they're learning the knowledge from him. And Grandpa, in this meantime, is slowly warming up because he sees that, like, Noah's not just a huckster passing through. He's like, invested in helping this ranch by, like, doing hard work. And, like, the kids, because of that, are also becoming more invested in the ranch. Because this person that they now look up to, they see is like, oh, this is something that we can do. Mm-hmm. Eventually, Noah shows up to breakfast one morning, and he's, like, just despondent. Because he, this whole time that he's been teaching the kids, he can't divine any water. And he wants to leave because he feels like he's failed.
Well, they're in the outback, and, right? So, yeah. It's like outback. Trying to find snow in Florida. Like, you fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's this time, it's Grandpa who encourages him to stay. And he has, like, a nice heartfelt speech about how, even though Noah hasn't found any water, all the work he's done has really helped make up the difference, and the ranch is more successful than it has been in years. Right. And that Noah's arrival in their time of need must have been predestined. And Grandpa didn't hear that speech about him being predestined to share his knowledge, Noah's like, it takes it as a sign. And just this, then we hear this noise coming from outside. It's the kids. They have Noah's dowsing rod, and water is just bursting from the ground. And we get, for the last bit of this last scene in the movie, we get the whole family running around, whooping and hollering in their newly found desert spring. And Noah joyfully tells the rest of the family how happy he is to finally have a family to hand his knowledge down to.
Aww.
Wow, yeah. That's a real ABC Family joint. That's really nice.
Yeah, like I said, I didn't go, like,
I think it's a little better than that, which...
Oh, no, but just thematically, like...
Yeah. I didn't go too aggressive or too creative. I like, had an idea of what style of movie the director decided it would make out of, you know, like, you
after
know,
the 27 failed choices. Yeah.
Like, it wasn't, I can read them again if you want.
No, I think I remember every single one of them. So yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Thanks.
Cool. Yeah. Who's your favorite out of that group?
Oh,
mine's Peter Weir.
I like Peter Weir.
Same.
Quite a bit,
he's great. Yeah.
I was going to say that. Probably George Miller after that.
He's very iconic. Yeah.
Sure. Also, I like Jennifer Kent, you know, like,
I actually Googled her for later because I've never heard of her.
Yo, you've seen the Babadook.
Oh, she's Babadook. Yeah. Babadooks? Yeah, I know Babadooks.
Yeah.
Babadooks. Star of a different channel.
Sister YouTube channel? Yeah, sure.
We can't keep claiming that these much more successful people are like...
I'm pretty sure we could. I mean, like, how the Duke stole Christmas and all that, which is the holiday release, I assume.
No. Can't wait for that, if that's real. So do you want to
also
fill me in on how wrong I was?
Babe Pig in the City, but go.
Babe Pig in the City is a George Miller movie. Yeah,
right.
Confusing. He only produced the first one; he didn't direct it.
Oh, right.
Right.
Yeah, you were not very close.
No. My at-home master's in Australian cinema studies didn't pay off.
Yeah, that is a low percentage shot. Yeah, you're shooting from, like, half court at least. Yeah. Yeah. Seth, you got that IMDb?
I sure as shit do.
Okay. Sounded kind of like you were vamping while the page loaded, but what do I know?
I think I breathed in some tequila.
Oh, congrats.
Oh, it's a party in my lungs and no one's invited me, except for poison control.
It goes in faster now. Lungs.
Is it worse? Is it more fun or less fun than just shooting it right up your butt?
Well, less fun, but
yeah, I don't know if you want to boof tequila, but that's fine. Yeah,
it just feels like it would burn. One way to find out. I mean, I'll let you guys know tomorrow.
as a counterpoint, I do always think that an eight ball in the corner pocket, i.e. the scrotum, is the best way to
You're gonna inject tequila into your scrotum?
No, an eight ball.
Oh. I I know that is two things, a pool billiard thing and cocaine and heroin mixed together. Precisely. I think
it's the latter. So you know,
how do you get that into your scrotum? I'm not.
You
have a different scrotum, of course you do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
it's the recipe that has stolen many of our best plus size male comedians. You know,
it's it true. Has. Sure has.
Also known as a fat Elvis, because it's got peanut butter involved and banana
and cocaine. Yep.
I could really go for a peanut butter, banana, and bacon sandwich. I'm not gonna lie. I could eat that right now.
I could always eat that. I mean, when I make a BLT, I put peanut butter on instead of mayonnaise.
Oofer doofers.
Weird. I sub hummus personally. But
a counterpoint. It's very, very similar. You know, that bacon and peanut butter thing is going on. You still have the fat layer. And then peanut butter and other savory things like tomatoes, like used quite often in Southeast Asian cuisine, etc. Like it's...
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You can I'm make...
Often in now that you've context, explained it, but... I'm kind mm-hmm. of... Yeah. I'm coming around.
I used at a university. I used to request that when I went to a little cafe.
Did you go to school with fucking Charles at university? What the fuck?
Sorry.
Oh, we were talking about Coronation Chicken, and Seth was writing down his grocery list like chicken, mayonnaise,
chicken, mayonnaise, the worst curry powder possible.
But in the smallest amount they will sell to me.
The smallest amount. Yeah. Yeah, I'll have a bump of curry powder for my shitty mayonnaise.
Let me get a bump of McCormick curry powder. Yeah.
Is it old? Make sure it's old.
I want it a bump. Caked.
Bump is the funniest unit of measurement for spices.
It's so... like pinch bump eighth of a teaspoon.
So a half an eighth a teaspoon is a bump. We're gonna agree on this right now, right? I'm gonna change my conversion chart on my fridge.
A 16th of a teaspoon, yeah. And they're like, do you want a little baggie for it? No, I'll just keep it in my nose.
No. I have a cross with a little spoon in it.
Yeah. My cruel intentions, internet swag. Yeah.
Okay. So, Predestination is a 2014 film.
Mm-hmm.
So here is, wow, it's really long. I should have loaded this earlier.
It does have an
this
expand
whole
link.
Time you didn't even click on it.
No, I didn't even look at it.
Let's vamp again.
I got it. For his final assignment, a top temporal agent must pursue the one criminal that has eluded him throughout time. The chase turns into a unique, surprising, and mind-bending exploration of love, fate, identity, and time travel taboos.
I'm gonna toss this out here. I'm gonna toss this out here real quick.
Uh-huh.
That summary
was shitty.
Makes me no. Well, that summary makes me think of the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie Time Cop, if Brandon Cronenberg, director of Possessor, directed it.
Brandon Cronenberg? He wasn't even born back in 2014. What are you talking about?
He's just a little tyke. A little tyke with the little... He's got the little clapper, and he's like, take one, please.
He was a twinkle in his dad's evil little eyes.
Yeah. Now I'm thinking of a little baby in like the old silent movie director like Jod Hopper pants with the fucking beret and a big old kerchief with the big bullhorn thing.
Fun.
But it's a baby and it's adorable and it's Brandon Cronenberg and Soy Joy's the new sex.
He
has a widow knife that he throws at the actors to get them to act better.
I don't like that. Okay, so...
Hey, man, surgery's the new movie, sex. It's a scalpel, actually, not a knife, but it's fine.
Got it.
That was Dad's movie, not my movie.
My movie shows people peeing on each other and ejaculating.
Yeah, it's really
I still haven't seen Infinity Pool.
I'm 7. It's a lot. It's a very difficult movie.
You know, to be honest, I did watch Possessor after our episode on it,
yeah,
which I am so proud of you guys that we made an episode on Possessor before Possessor was available to watch. Yeah,
that's true.
Like, awesome. I did not realize that it wasn't, and then that came to light while we were doing the thing.
Yeah.
I actually enjoyed
Possessor. I didn't like Possessor.
I thought it was fine.
I didn't really like Infinity Pool. It's one of those, like, you watch it and you go like, okay, I see the shape of the thing. I get what you're doing. It's just, I don't want to be here right now.
Wait, you're going to have sex with a fish?
Shape of Water.
Yeah.
Nice. I think I'll hold my comment until I watch Infinity Pool finally.
Sure.
Yeah.
But
I'm probably never gonna watch it. So
my feeling of watching Possessor was like I'm watching a bad David Cronenberg movie, yes, not 100%. A movie by a different person.
By Brandon.
So I mean, Infinity Pool's kind of like that, but it. He does branch a little bit more, but I gotta say, I think it turned me off to Skarsgård. I was like, I now have had enough of him.
Oh, motherfucker's a freak. All he wants to do is be in freaky, weird movies.
That's true. I know, and like, it's fine, but he's like too good at it, or it's just like too much of it. And I was just like, it's all right, like, I'm good. I'm fine.
It's very clear that like what he wants to do in his off time is get beat up by Mia Goth. And like, that's fine, dude.
Don't we all know? I mean,
but. I didn't see X or Pearl, so I don't know.
It depends on how into D&D you are, because I feel like there's a pretty strong crossover.
Go on.
Oh no, it's actually Ren Fairs. There's like a Vic Venn diagram of like D&D and Ren Fairs and BDSM stuff, and it's all.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
Continuing on.
Yeah.
Lee, let's talk
Infinity
about
Infinity Pool at night, Sailor's Delight. You know.
Infinity
I'm
Pool.
Actually, I'm very interested to hear about this movie because it kind of sounds cool.
Infinity so, Pool in morning? So
you better get used to time crimes because you're in one.
Yeah, for sure. Oh boy.
Okay, so this summary is long and it is distilled as much as is humanly possible from several sources that I had to read to like fully comprehend what was going on in this movie.
To be fair, I figured out some of it.
You figured out almost all of it.
Mid-watch, but
can I ask a potentially
we've done this in the
question?
Past. Yeah, sure.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. Mm. What you're saying is, Seth, that you were able to no-scope what the movie was about while watching it.
Seth has done this on long shots several times in the past. Yeah.
What I thought you meant, Zach, was that after watching it, you were still unclear, and then Seth helped you figure it out.
Oh no.
Oh okay.
No.
Because what I was gonna do is say maybe if you didn't watch movies while doing other things, that would. You know, if you paid attention,
that still applies. That is 100%.
I was also watching this at work, but like, I mean,
so say we all like,
I'm
gonna have like a distinct different computer now to watch things on, not just a second screen.
That is nice.
That's interesting.
That's
very interesting.
The problem I have with when I watch things is that I can't. Like think or focus if there's too much sound because of the like misophonia stuff. So like I am constantly like pausing, picking back up, pausing, picking back up.
Instead of watch this movie,
I can
all
do.
Day.
Yeah, I can do repetitive labor and like what's the word I'm looking for? Not secretary.
Admin.
Sure. An admin type thing.
The more PC secretary?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I can do that kind of work, but like I can't read something and watch.
I'm the exact opposite. If I have total silence, I immediately can't focus on work because all I can think about is like, this is so dull and I'm so bored. I like have to have other shit going on and that allows me to do the work.
I do like some noise. It's the words that throw me. It's the words. Sure. So I've been listening to Holst a lot lately, Planets.
Oh, Gustav.
Yeah. You know what's fun about that is I didn't know how much of the Planets was in the Venture Brothers it's like everything.
Jupiter is in it all the time. Jupiter like when they're rebuilding the cocoon, they play Mars like constantly. They even do some Uranus though. They do some Uranus, and they do a little bit of Mercury in the later episodes, which is really interesting.
Of course, my favorite use of Holst is in the beginning of the Terrence Malick movie Days of Heaven, when they do, I think it's Venus. Amazing. I thought that was the score to the movie for the longest time, because people are like, the score to that movie is amazing. Score of the movie is amazing. But the part that I like is the part of pre-existing music that
Lee, can I get you into some like real good classical music to do all your work? Because like that's what I use.
Hit me with a bump of that shit, and I can put it in my Spotify.
That's not going to be enough. Now that we have the scale, that's a bump. Yeah, is a very small. That's not going to be enough.
It's like not even one movement.
Lee, you're going to need an 8-ball of Rimsky-Korsakov
straight to the nutsack.
Especially Rimsky-Korsakov. I mean, that shit.
Speaking of classical music, this is a pitch I wanted to make to you guys off mic. You guys know I fucking love Ken Russell movies. You know he's directed a shitload of biopics about composers. Sure, I would like to start doing some of those biopics on the show at some point.
Are they named after the composer? Yeah. That makes this thing hard.
Not always, all of them.
Not, okay. Always, not all of there's, them. There's okay. a couple of them. So guess get ready for that, Zach, because I've seen many of them.
Also, before I forget, partner of the show, my partner. suggested a movie we should do. We are being loose here. Seth, this is Seth especially. I think this one's better for. Have you seen or do you know what the movie Nanochka is?
Oof. Not off the top of my head.
Nanochka, and you're gonna fake it, baby.
I can extrapolate from the name.
Oh, exactly. And the thing is, you might not be right.
Okay.
Claude.
Add that to the list, Zach.
Lee, you want to hear about this? I'll definitely do that.
I actually do want to hear about this movie. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, all of that tequila it's very long, that's in my lungs is really getting into my blood. Yeah. So
pulmonary tequila is...
I'm excited.
It gets you. Yeah.
Okay. I was at the hospital the other day and somebody had pulmonary in the tequila. So.
Well, so you're in for a real night then, Lee.
It was the champs.
Yeah, they didn't make it because, of course, their lungs were full of tequila.
Yeah, that will kill you. Okay, so there's the super secret temporal bureau.
My avioli so drunk? Go ahead.
That uses time travel to prevent giant crimes, save lots of lives. The idea is like, you know, it's this Minority Report in reverse kind of thing.
This is a not uncommon.
Would you go back and kill Hitler kind of thing? Yeah.
Right.
There's a whole book series right now that's really special. That's pretty famous. The first book in the series is One Damn Time After Another. I can't remember the name of the series. And it's just a series about time cops. Literally, it's about time cops. Sure. And the author of this series writes a book like every 3 months, and I fucking don't understand. Ooh, because they're long books.
Yeah, Jody Taylor is their name.
Thank you. Is the name of the author. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is a pretty common trope.
Yes, sure. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. You know, you stop Bush from doing 9/11 or whatever.
You build stronger steel and weaker jet fuel or something. I don't know. Yeah. Oh, no. More lung tequila. We filled both of them. Oh, God.
Oh, it was beer this time.
I have 9/1 dialed on my phone, so just let me know. Let me know when you need me to finish it.
Real loose. You know what I like about a loose episode is it alienates at least one, always alienates at least one of the people listening, one of the five people tops listening.
Sure.
Just to make sure.
I hope it's Charles this time.
I know, right? Just to make sure that, like, but it might not alienate. Some people enjoy these. Just to make sure we've alienated at least one person this episode, Bean Club is great.
I know which one that's gonna alienate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How's that street team going, bud?
I don't want to do that.
So
I love Bean Club, but
Time crimes. So Ethan Hawke is an agent and time traveler, obviously, on his last mission.
Of course, this is his last mission
every time. So he's badly burned, failing to stop the very poorly titled Fizzle Bomber. Why that?
And everybody complains about that name too. So,
yeah, it's very stupid. You had all the words in the universe.
Oh, it's a joke in the movie.
It's sort of something that helps various timelines of various people recall like their memories being like, hey, you hated that name, like you thought that name was fucking stupid.
It's something to hang a hat on that
it's their touchstone, because for them time is always changing, so this is
right, so it's a, so it's a very useful idiosyncrasy that it's something as dumb as the fizzle bomber, and they talk about it right
in Inception parlance. It's a totem almost.
I guess. Okay. After he recovers from this bad, bad burn, he's sent on another
bad burns.
Lee, there's so much to get through. There's so much to get through.
There is.
He's sent on one last mission, and that is to recruit Sarah Snook as his replacement. Okay. So Sarah Snook has a lot of backstory. It's like a third.
Yeah, it's really complicated.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know when the last time you Googled Sarah Snook is.
This is not going to be quick, I can tell. Okay.
Yeah, that's not going to be quick Sarah Snook at all.
Before. Because, you know, we're both Succession watchers.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I also have watched it.
We're both the eldest sons, yes.
Yeah. Partner of the show, my partner has a cap that says I'm the eldest boy.
I know. We're both literally the eldest boys, though, so yes.
That is true, yeah. When you Google a celebrity,
does that make me
Roman? Yeah,
you're the Culkin, and you've got a mommy thing going. Yeah, for sure.
You know how, like, when you Google a celebrity, it usually auto completes to net worth, feet, or husband / wife. Yes. Mm, yeah.
Yes.
Turns out when you Google Sarah Snook, butt is what. Is her butt prominently featured in this movie?
No. Exactly. Okay. In fact, the exact opposite.
You have hit on something that will be very critical later.
That's true.
Very interesting. Yes. I'm intrigued. Yes, I'll stay quiet for another 5 seconds.
That is the correct amount. Okay.
Right. Two. One.
Jesus Christ.
It's like It's like talking to me.
I haven't had a drink in like days. I'm buzzing now, boys.
We first see her in an orphanage as a wee bitty child. She's a bit of an outcast, but seems very smart and can definitely stick up for herself. Like, she's got some prowess.
Wait, this is how secret agents in movies, at least, get recruited.
Like F1 drivers, they see it in you when you're like three somehow.
Wait. This is literally the James Bond backstory. He is a orphan, and they send
Zach, are you doing this linearly, like temporally linearly, as opposed to like plot linearly?
As it appeared in the movie.
One of those.
No, kind of a mix. Maybe a little bit of a mix.
Yeah, because
spoilers at the end, though. I'm not going to spoil anything.
Right. So Ethan Hawke is all burned to shit. And then he, goes on his last mission. He is a bartender. And...
Oh, sure.
And goes
Does
back
he work
to,
at
like...
Mr. Cacciatore's down on Sullivan Street?
I might have flipped these. I have that part later. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Right.
This all happens kind of at the same time-ish.
Right. He's a bartender, and then he's working at the bar, and Sarah Snook's character, who is a man.
Yes. We'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah, okay. Right. Yeah. So you are doing it temporarily.
Wait, is she always a man in
Don't worry
this?
About
no,
it.
We'll
sometimes.
It's significantly more
we can get
than
there.
That. Yeah.
I will change my statement. We might get there.
Yeah.
Does the
Jesus
the
fucking Christ
travel of the movie mean that, like, depending on what the missions are, it can change, like, the
no,
way you were
no,
conceived?
No, shut the fuck up. No.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Okay. So she's contacted to enlist in what we find out in like her late teen years ish, the Temporal Bureau. And despite showing incredible skills, she's disqualified for medical reasons. Put a pin in that. Jane, her character, then falls in love and becomes pregnant during
C-section. She is female presenting all this time.
She grows up as female presenting, yes. During a C-section, everyone finds out that she was born with all of the internal sex organs.
Mm-hmm. She's intersex,
because of,
right.
Yes. Because of complications, they give her a hysterectomy and, confusingly, a full-blown gender reassignment. So
this is like 1956 or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They take out her uterus and then also decide we're going to just make you a man, which it does not happen with consent as far as I
recall. And, it's confusing. And this is all a story that Sarah Snook is now telling to Ethan Hawke, the bartender.
Yes. And it's clear that he sort of already knows some of this. Like, he's set up to like gain her trust, essentially.
Right. Again, he's doing a lot of like leading questions and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So she accepts this, becoming John instead of Jane, and starts a new life after this traumatizing experience. Mm-hmm. So, getting to the bar, Ethan Hawke meets John on his now last mission, giving him the chance to take revenge on the lover that caused all of these clearly traumatizing experiences that got her pregnant in the first place. Mm-hmm. All the while filling John in on the insane time travel stuff. Like, John and Sarah were not aware that this was kind of the onus of the thing the whole time. So he's literally taking her on time travels, and she's like, what the fuck is happening? But, like, it's all sort of, you know, unfolding.
Right.
So John accepts this in a roundabout way, finds himself in contact with Jane, who is his past self.
Right. Okay.
Because we're time traveling. He falls in love with Jane, himself, herself, and realizes this was Ethan's plan the whole time. Incidentally, Jane somehow never realizes that this male exact carbon copy of herself is in fact herself.
So does John impregnate Jane? Is that
correct?
Exactly.
The time loop that we're working on?
This correct. Is twist number one. So John and Jane's were themselves. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ethan then goes back in time to take Jane's baby to the orphanage in 1963, because this is all happening vaguely in the 70s.
Right, I forgot about when it was. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So introducing the predestination.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that the baby was born. I assume that it
that's
was
when the hysterectomy
whole,
and the it was this,
born
the
there
gender
was
they, so it the baby was born and
right.
they did it wasn't
right.
like a
we see
stillborn,
the
yeah.
we see the baby born part like first, and then we kind of unwind
right.
this whole thing
I
afterwards.
Mean as yeah. as you know, much like Banquo, the baby
yes,
was
ripped from my mother
untimely ripped from woman's womb. Come
correct.
On.
Right. Correct. Just like Seth, I think.
Just like me.
Both of my children. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Natural baby.
Same. Right. Yeah.
Big head and everything.
Yeah, super all same.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey, my limbs are all fucked up.
Sure.
I can't be a king of
saved
Scotland.
Your life. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So Ethan takes the baby back to the orphanage, introducing the predestination paradox, where Jane's baby, Jane is the baby, the mother, and the father all at the same time. This was Jane in the orphanage.
Wait,
yeah,
she's
you're
also
making,
the baby?
You're making the correct face, yes. They're, it's layers on layers on layers, yes.
I was 100% with you on the mother and father. I mean,
again,
even though the father doesn't make sense. Well, okay, no, it does. In the context of
they
the
can
science
time travel,
of this movie. See, it makes sense in the science of this
it
movie.
It actually does make sense, yeah, because they can time travel arbitrarily. So it's all the same person, but they're all on different time
it's
sort
of
planes.
It's not quite
so.
Arbitrary. The rules are within 50 years of the invention of time travel.
Sure.
In the 80s.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, which that never really comes
that's a weird
play.
Thing to
yeah.
add into the movie. That,
that
seems
that is arbitrary for sure.
Oh,
that
yeah.
feels
it was.
Like a thing that was added in for the sequels.
I don't think so, because I don't think this ends with the sequel. I don't think
no, of, well, if we make a sequel, people will say, why couldn't you go back to this day? We need a rule to cover that.
Sure.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
Zach, I'm going to send you a link to look at later, unrelated to the show.
Is it just...
Is it Sarah Snook's butt? Because I'm going to look at it right now.
You got me.
Ethan, so now obviously this has gotten very complicated. Ethan kind of tries to tie up loose ends, making sure all the characters throughout all the timelines do as they were meant to do to make sure all the shit lines up and nobody like fully understands what's happening so that they can't like change the destiny, if you will, of the whole situation.
Do we learn by the end why it's essential that all these things happen?
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. We're getting close. We smash cut back to the fizzle bomber thing from time to time. You never see the faces, and it's not clear exactly what's going on.
Right, you never.
Fizzle bomber sounds like an insult from Hook.
Right.
Yeah, it's childish and weird. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Ethan's time travel device is supposed to decommission itself after this last mission, but it doesn't. And also, the bureau guy seems to be setting Ethan up to take one last crack at this bombing thing because it's kind of. You know, it's like the one that got away for him, I guess. So Ethan figures out in another realization of his that the bomber is actually his future self. Going back in time to make sure that the bombing does happen because he thinks, I'm not sure whether this is true or not, but he thinks that if the bombing is stopped, there's actually a higher death toll. And so he's doing the right thing by continuing to let the bombing happen. Fewer people will die. Aggregate net win. Right?
What
the greater good. The yeah. greater good.
The exactly. greater good. No, what Ethan, old Ethan, future Ethan, thinks what? Is that without the threat that is poised by the Vizzle Bomber, the Bureau will not exist. Therefore, he will not have existed in order to stop the other terrorist events.
Right. Uh-huh. He's getting into the spiral butterfly effect of the whole thing, where he's like getting a little wild on the whole theory part. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So
it's a real Ethan Suplee, Ashton Kutcher, Amy Smart. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
One of those people had a real rough week. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm. I guess that's going to date this episode quite a bit.
Well, if he didn't defend a rapist.
I mean, it could have been two of those three people, because one of those people is a very active Scientologist.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
Okay.
And of course, Amy Smart has committed no crimes, and yet we decided she's not a star anymore. Yeah. I don't know why.
That is a fucking shame. Why. Yeah.
Yeah. Why did that?
She's
happen?
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she'll bounce back.
Maybe. Okay. Then we get the big reveal that Ethan has all the same sexual reassignment surgery scars that John did. He realizes after the bombing and the horrific burns, they just gave him Ethan's face and further manipulated the whole situation to again tie up all these loose ends. So every single main character is the same person. Every single
one. You know what? I was with it until that. Honestly, I was totally with it until that.
I actually think that it works reasonably well.
They meter out the twists.
Right. Is different.
Visual of the top surgery scars and everything, you're like, oh fuck. Yeah.
That the surgery scars when Sarah Stoke like reveals her male body is really good. Like, I think that was super well done.
Yeah. Well, and then there's that previous one where with the horrific burns, and Seth, you were the one that pointed this out to me. Ethan wakes up, essentially looks in the mirror and goes, oh, I don't recognize myself. And then you realize in hindsight, oh, that's because it was John who looks like Sarah Snook and got a new face. So there's a lot of those little nice Easter eggs where you're
I can see where that plays an important part into someone being bought into what they're doing.
Yes, it's hard to describe this in a fast way, but your hypothesis that watching the movie is better is very correct.
Yeah, so maybe
I'm interested.
Sounds
interesting. Yeah.
See, Lee, this is why I wanted to draw it.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and unlike Primer, where you can't, it's just like fucking impossible. Like this movie,
I don't
has
know about
like
that. There's a lot of fucking drawings. You want me to Google Primer?
Yeah, but
drawing
they're
right
all
now?
Very like... different, so no one fundamentally understands the thing, right? Like,
can I tell you something? I've never seen Primer.
It's good enough, but it doesn't answer any of the questions that this movie does. Like,
here's the thing: is for years everybody was like, "You're gonna see Primer," and
they've
seen Primer?
They
you
made it
Primer.
For like $50,000 or whatever. Like, it
and
was
then,
fun, yeah.
And I continued not to watch Primer. And then it turned out Shane Carruth was a weird sex pest. And I was like, you know what?
Really?
I'm going to continue not seeing Primer.
Oh, I didn't know that. They were the it guys there for a while. Weren't there two of
them?
Well,
and then, you know, he made that other movie, Upstream Color. And everyone was like, oh, this is the guy who made Primer. It's like, I don't fucking care.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Upstream Color was a slog for sure. I remember being like, oh, okay.
Hey, but question. What about the porno parody, Upstream Comer?
Okay, we're back. All right.
I think you know whether or not I've seen that.
Pulls out a DVD, closes it, puts it back on the shelf.
I don't have any physical media other than the laser discs that you've sent me.
Oh,
like,
that's right.
Me
that's
neither right. anymore.
Yeah.
A couple of 64 games. That's the other.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Well, and books.
Almost done. The most physical of media,
I guess that's true.
So main character is all the same person. The Bureau realized the whole thing got a little out of hand, and then they manipulated this one character throughout various times to clean all their own shit up and tie up all their own loose ends, which this character then of course finally realizes, and the movie ends on them trying to figure out if anything can be done to stop further death, and sort of implied should they intervene more, or has the thing sort of sort of you know, put a bow on itself, and
is it
done?
A closed loop, right? So like, I mean, it's I mean, I don't think that it's like the Bureau not having control at any point. The Bureau has control. From
sure,
the
I mean, they have architected the whole thing. Yeah,
right. I don't.
But like
I,
the complexity, like the complexity suggests that something may have gone wrong at some point. Like,
I honestly don't think so. Yeah. I think the entirety of it has been planned from jump, and everybody played their part exactly how they were intended to do it. And that's the way, because the Bureau needs to justify its existence, right?
Okay, so I was going to say, what's the point then? Because they could just get a guy who's on board to just go stop the time crimes. But if that's the point, is the things have to happen so that the Bureau exists at all, then
That's how I interpreted it, was that the Bureau noticed these things, created this entire system over this, you know, 100-year gap. Yeah. And then manipulated everything that could possibly have happened with this one single individual. Completely fucked them over.
That's
so that
true. It's nice and clean, though, if it's just one person.
Exactly.
That's fair.
Yeah. Make it suicide is nice and neat. Mm-hmm. Like,
nice and neat. Why? Yeah. Now, let me ask you something. Where does the Adjustment Bureau play in this?
Please. Unmentioned.
Yeah. Also, hoverboards don't work on water.
Because you got power. Yeah.
I do like...
Local indie theater is doing a week of Trilogy of Trilogies, and the Back to the Future trilogy is one of them.
Oh, fun.
And
you know my favorite of
those. The Back
to the
Future trilogy, despite liking all those movies, is not a trilogy I ever think of as a trilogy.
No, they're very different. Yeah.
Agreed.
I wouldn't watch them in a row. Yeah.
I would.
Okay.
100%. Because I love 3 so much.
Real
it doesn't make
boy.
Any sense.
Real train boy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I
you
do
know.
Really like the ZZ Top song from 3.
Yeah.
Exactly. So this movie sounds good.
It's actually pretty good.
For a time travel movie,
a real change of pace for what we usually do.
For a time travel movie, you can go different directions. You can go very simple and not complicate anything, and it's kind of boring. Or you can do Primer, where everybody leaves going, like, dumb people leave and go, that was so complicated, I think I like it because I want to sound smart. And smart people go, that was complicated and I hate it. But
because
this right
it didn't
middle.
Tie up any loose ends, right?
It didn't make sense of any
this,
of the plot.
This
lines.
One has a nice, neat bow. Yes.
Nice
generally,
neat McFly.
Jesus Christ.
Clearly, there, like as Zach said, there could be the ambiguity of like,
sure.
was it all predestined or was it not, well, and deviated.
Yeah, but, I like the ending is the final character trying to come to grips with the decision, should I intervene further or is that going to cause more pain? And I think that is the main point. Like, that's, as the audience, what you're trying to decipher too. Like, did they do the right thing? Did they not? So it's kind
that's
of self-referential. It is. Yeah,
life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, it's just enough, like, mystery and complexity to make it a really fun movie, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hmm. No, it's very decent.
Yes.
Can I pitch real quick? Can I recommend real quick a very enjoyable, very short sci-fi thing for people, or time travel thing for people to look into?
No, Primer's really short. Don't say Primer.
Yeah.
No, it's I don't think they're together anymore, but a former comedy duo named Sloven and Allen had a bit that was a sci-fi bit, a time travel sci-fi bit.
What?
In their stand-up routine.
What?
That is incredible. And y'all should look it up. It was in their Comedy Central Presents special for Sloven and Allen. And
2001,
It involves a lot of eating of Malamars and drinking of red Gatorade. It's very funny.
Okay. Lee, what was the Adam Pally show where you get in the duffel bag?
Oh, my God. Yeah, the time travel Adam Pally show. I
that
fucking love that
show.
That
was so good.
Making history.
Yeah. No one ever watched that show, and it was so goddamn good.
Except for me and you. Yeah. We were the audience.
The number one Adam Pally fans in existence, yes.
I still think about all the time. There's an episode where Sam Adams and John Hancock come back from the past to the present, and one of the characters says, "Well, I asked for some help on this project," and they bust in the room on hoverboards dabbing in their colonial clothing. And it's just like a thing that will, like, I'll be dying and my, like, fucking Citizen Kane Rosebud will be John Hancock dabbing on a hoverboard, and people are like, what is that? What? What?
100%. 100%. Yeah. It's so good. Okay. Seth, do you have thoughts about this movie? I have very few because I spent most of my time trying to figure out what
I mean,
the fuck was going
on. I have lots of thoughts. Sure. But
any coherent ones?
Well, that's a good question.
How many non-butt thoughts do you have?
Oh, we can get to that. So there is a wild, very cool Sarah Snook side dong shot when she turns into John.
Right.
You see just mid shaft kind of curved, or like on the outside of her thigh from the side. And I was like, wow, you don't see that every day. And I don't think we needed it because we knew he was a man now. But like, okay.
Do you think
that
they got Ethan Hawke to stunt dong?
No,
it looks like a fake dong. If I had to go, yeah, I am the preeminent expert on the hog log. I think so. Looks like a fake dong. Also,
no,
it might be Sarah Snook's body. I don't know.
there's like some really awesome work by Sarah Snook.
Yes, she is an outstanding performance.
Because
let's just point out how good of an actress she is. Zach didn't know she was Australian, and he's been watching her play an American person for at least 5 years.
I've heard her give interviews. I'm certain I've heard her in her actual accent, and I forgot. That's how good she is. Yeah.
No, she there's a certain scene where she's flirting with herself, and it's not like her as Ethan Hawke. It's her as John.
It's
meeting.
Jane and John are flirting.
It's Jane and John, and it is like a really great scene.
The chemistry is amazing. Seth, you were like, she had to flirt with a green screen twice, and you wouldn't be able to. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah, no, it's actually really spectacular. Like, yeah. She should have won awards for this because it is like really, really well done.
And as we know, genre is always overlooked for genre fiction. In every media is overlooked for these kind of things, except for maybe TV sometimes. Maybe.
Yeah. This movie was largely overlooked, which is a shame, but
So reacting against a green screen slash yourself. Yeah. I recently checked the Brian Cox's memoirs out of the library on audiobook.
Wow.
Speaking of Sarah Snook connection, because Succession.
Yeah.
Fuck off. And the prologue is him telling a story about acting with Steven Seagal. And he's talking about how when you are doing a scene where only one camera, where only one character is on screen, typically the other character who you're talking to, the person who plays that role, is delivering that line to you. Right. And he's like, it can be boring and it can be frustrating, but it's part of the job and does it.
Is that typical? I thought they usually have stand-ins, just like reading off a script.
No, you should have the actual person so that they knew who
it is. So ideally the actual person does it.
Okay.
And in his autobiography, or no, it's a memoir, but there's a difference. So he's talking about Steven Seagal and he's like, almost everyone does this. Almost everyone puts in the effort and the respect to their co-stars.
Right.
To deliver these lines to help them give a better performance, except for Steven Seagal. And then he talks about doing this movie with Steven Seagal, and Steven Seagal is walking around set with this woman who he's like, and this woman could have been a child. And he's clearly trying to impress her. And he's like, this Brian Cox, this is what an actor looks like. And I looked up at him and I said, no, Steven, I'm just learning my lines. And then Steven Seagal showed up the next day to do the off-camera line reads with me because apparently I impressed him so much. And halfway through, I said, hey, Steven, I really appreciate the effort, but I think we're good. And sent him away. And so, like...
Wonderful.
Can you imagine how... Like, so the typical way to do this is... your co-star is reading these lines to you. Yeah. Sarah Snook, that would have been impossible for her for sure. in this situation.
Yeah,
that is so impressive.
No, but Seth is right.
There's... Maybe they give her an earpiece for her off camera.
I mean, it's possible because it is a close cut, right? But even then,
there's still not a person there if they do that. Like,
yeah, it was green screen. The frame was both of them, so it's not like a multicam thing. Yeah.
Best case scenario, it's a PA standing in front of her. Like,
best case scenario. No, it was super great scene.
Yeah. Lee, the thing you just said reminded me. Blank Check was telling a story. I think it was Blank Check this week, or maybe it was an older podcast.
Was it the Tatiana Maslany playing She-Hulk with the giant headpiece on?
Oh no, not okay. So I was listening to old apps because I was out of podcasts. They were talking about Mickey Rourke. And I forget the actress, but it was somebody else. And the director correctly identified that both the actress had a crush on some PA, and Mickey Rourke, a nightmare person, had a crush on a different PA. So got the PAs to stand
in. It was Darren Aronofsky, the wrestler, and Marissa Tomei.
Marissa Tomei, yeah. So he got these PAs to stand in because he was like, I can't get the emotions that I need out of these people unless I have the young PAs stand in for the other actor at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, gross, but also genius, I think? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Wow.
Another story that I've heard from that filming was Marissa Tomei coming up to the director and being like, I know I have to kiss him. How fast can we get this over with? I just can't.
Yeah.
He's turned into a real clay face.
Refuses
to admit it.
And not a fun clay face like Alan Tudyk's clay face on the Harley Quinn show.
Sure.
But like a real upsetting clay face like one from the comics.
Yeah. Or Batman the Animated Series or...
True.
Where he's just like a weird semblance of a human. Regardless, Rumblefish is good. But also, this movie.
It's Angel Heart. Great.
Zach, I don't remember any like specific bullshit that I came up with, but there like was a lot.
Heinlein was the
original... right. Yeah. So Lee, you probably shouldn't be surprised, but this is a Robert L. Heinlein short story.
Oh
yeah, right.
Yeah, I thought it sounded familiar.
Yeah.
Seth correctly identified all the Easter eggs in the movie referring to Heinlein. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think Seth and I have talked about this a lot, is like after the 70s end, there are like a handful of sci-fi story structures that keep happening.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, it's you can make the argument that it's because the people who came before were like, not only were they like the early writers, but they were so good that they came up with all the really great stuff.
Yeah.
Or you can make an argument that like, it's just lazy pulp bullshit. Or like, but like, there are very common sci-fi stories. Heinlein is one of the people that writes a lot of the very common sci-fi story structures.
Right, exactly. Especially ones that translate super well into film. And this is this film is based off of a short story called "All You Zombies."
Oh fuck! Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
There you are.
All right.
And you know, a number of times in the film, actually twice, there are Heinlein novels that very very briefly come into focus, and I saw them.
Well, okay. Seth, you have to take credit for this. The one is next to a typewriter and it's face up and you can read the title. The other one is the back cover and you only see half of it and it's in 1 second and you went, oh yeah, it's Heinlein. And I was like,
so
how
like
the
butt
fuck?
Of the novel.
Yeah, the literal
it's
dumper.
Essentially, it's essentially the dumper of the novel. And And it was maybe a half an hour later. But yeah, I was like, oh, okay. So like there's Heinlein stuff happening just because of those weird little cues that I pick up, and it's it is a short story, and short stories do tend to translate better to film, and it's a pretty decent one.
You get some room to breathe, right? Like you can make the screenplay, you can expand upon the like bones of the thing.
Like, I mean, I would love for one of my very favorite Russian short stories to be adapted from like 1919. But
well, then don't do it on this podcast because somebody's gonna steal it.
Well, what's the title?
Now, see, I don't want to say now.
Jesus
Christ. I'll say it off mic, but I think it'd be really good, and I think like because you have the legs anyway.
One of the things I like about like a short story adaptation is like there isn't the pressure to get everything in because you kind of by like necessity get everything in.
You necessarily have to embellish because it has to be a movie length thing.
Yeah. Well, but but that's the reason why. And Lee, I know you're not a short story boy, but I am.
Right.
I like short stories because you get to fill in the gaps yourself.
Yeah.
So that's a really good way of looking at it that I have not in the past.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I mean, anyway, I think this is a great movie. But anyway, I don't know what other points I have. Zach, I was sending you quotes the entirety of the day as I was watching this.
it did take a whole
night. I was like, for instance, Ethan Hawke at one point says, like, we were born into this job. Yeah, dude. Because
you literally
and then
were.
By the time you make it to the end of the movie, it's like you're watching Hot Fuzz, and it's like, ah, the clues. Mm-hmm.
And
we
that's
talked
part
a lot
of the
about
fun
that
part.
Too. We talked about that sometimes in time travel movies. There's very ham-fisted, like, oh. And Seth, you were looking for these. You mentioned like where's that's the fucking Chekhov's gun and all of this shit.
Because that's what I like looking for. That's how
usually in the first act. Like traditionally, that's where the Chekhov's gun
is. Exactly. Right, but this movie is exactly in the middle. Like, again, it's not too complex that you're like, none of that made any fucking sense. But it's only, there's nothing so obvious that you go, okay, that's coming back later. It's only in hindsight that you go, oh, those little subtle things did matter, turns out. Which I think is the perfect like mix of that thing. Yeah.
Okay. I think it's really
good. Is this something that I can easily find, or am I going to have download it?
We have a copy of it.
We do.
Okay. I would very much like a copy.
We in fact saved it specifically because we thought you might like it.
Yes.
Thank you.
So speaking,
so nice.
Speaking of it being not very findable, this movie inexplicably cost $5 million. It looks like $100 million movie.
The entirety
no, okay,
of it
I just I need to bring this up.
Five
yeah,
million dollars.
I need to bring this up.
Okay.
Is the thing that is becoming so readily apparent to me is how much of a film's budget goes to the actors.
Yes.
Cause like, for instance, Zach and I have seen the movie Bottoms, which is fucking incredible.
Best movie of the year. Calling it early. 100%.
Honestly, it's my second favorite movie this year.
No, you like that pipeline bullshit. Yeah, it's fine.
I do. Yeah. How to Blow Up a Pipeline. Right. Check it out. The FBI doesn't want the literal FBI doesn't want you to watch it.
I am on a list
because I paid for tickets to see that movie.
Bottoms is much more fun, though, for sure.
It is much more fun. Bottoms was, I believe, $11 million it cost to make, and it looks really good.
It looks good enough. There are parts that are cheap, but it doesn't matter because it's a comedy. It's fine. Like, it's totally fine. Yeah.
But for instance, like, Quantumania, the new Ant-Man movie, cost like $300 million. It looks like shit.
It looks awful. Like,
so much of it goes to the stars and like the people who have like who aren't even in the movie who still get paid because they jumped on the MCU so early that their contract gives them money just because an MCU movie exists.
And you're saying this in the middle of a WGA strike, so even more appropriate. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, at least the time of recording anyway.
I mean, knock on wood that the like, the idiots finally give the writers
so
what they
okay
deserve,
at but time at time of recording the Hollywood trades that are at least partially funded by studios have started writing articles about how it's very clear that the studios have lost this battle. So typically those trades do not write things like that if a strike is not about to end.
Okay. They would have the end there, I would assume.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So like fingers crossed on that.
Yeah.
Cause like who has given in to the demands? Fuck you. Who has acquiesced to the incredibly
reasonable
things
requirements
that writers and actors are asking
who,
for.
Who decided
who
is, to give
who
up
acquiesced
1% of their profits next year?
Yeah. Less than 1%.
A lot of them
A24 has acquiesced. Yep. And you know who else has acquiesced? Taylor Swift. Because she bypassed all of the studios, went directly to movie theaters chains, and said, I want to put out this movie, but I'm going to put out this movie only with the blessing of the unions. And she went to the unions and said, what do I need to do? And they said, you need to do this. And she said, done.
Sure.
And the movie theater chains said, great, we're going to make a shitload of money off of this.
Yeah.
Fucking
right.
It's just so easy.
Because it doesn't need to go to individuals. It needs to go to everyone. But
yeah. Right. Yeah. So movie budgets. There are a lot of movies I have seen this year that do not that don't have like $100 million budgets. And like, granted, I live near an independent movie theater and I get to see a lot of small movies. Mm-hmm. But like the movie Joyride about it's a comedy. Again, a comedy. About a group of Asian American women going to China to explore their roots, etc. That's a really shallow description of what this movie is actually about.
Yeah.
Anyway, all on location.
Yeah.
There is so much stuff going on. There is not 10 minutes of this movie taking place in the same location as the next 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It looks fantastic. It cost like $12 million.
Right. Yeah.
There is a way to make a movie in an affordable manner. And I think we are just so conditioned now to watching these crazy Marvel movies that's like, it was only $300 million to make that movie. It's like, there are ways to make a movie that looks good, especially with digital photography, because you don't have to pay for film and all that shit. And we forgot that like a movie can look good and not be expensive.
This is songs for the deaf, though. You're talking to us. We are already on board. Most people do not give a single fuck about
also,
this. That's the problem.
Despite the fact that two very proven domestic abusers perform on that album, Songs for the Deaf is an all-time banger. That's a great fucking album.
There's an
Nick Oliveri and Josh Homme. Like
15 years apart, both shitheads apparently. Yeah.
I fully agree. This movie looks
that's not gonna
really good because
it looks incredible.
Because
incredible.
It doesn't.
You can make a movie look good on a relatively small budget
if you
have skilled people working and are paying them a reasonable amount of money
goals. Even though this is a time travel movie, there's not that many special effects. Like, you don't need it because it's not important to the story. Like,
they did the right things. Like, every time somebody lands in a new time, there's an air cannon out of shot that shoots like a bunch of papers across the room, and you're like, that's all we needed. That's
or
all
every
anybody
time
needed.
Somebody leaves a time period, a glass breaks.
Yeah. And everybody gets it, and it's perfect. Yeah.
Signifier.
Exactly.
Like,
So also to this point, I was telling Seth, as far as having to, pay exorbitant salaries or whatever, they had other famous people in mind, or I guess the whatever studio it was. This was an Australian movie.
It was. You were right, Lane.
So I was at least correct
about
that.
You were right about that.
You were.
The writer-director is a two brothers, I think, on both
it
of them.
It is.
It is
the, what is it? The Spyrig brothers.
Yeah. They haven't done a ton of other shit, but everything else is like also pretty highly rated, so...
Michael and Peter, they haven't done a whole lot. It's mostly like little indie films.
Okay. Well, we don't have to delve because maybe this is a well for later.
Sure.
For movies that we'll actually enjoy.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right. So
they work with Ethan Hawke all the time though, which is weird.
Yeah, he seems to like them.
Okay.
Yeah.
They had considered other people for Sarah's role. And they specifically said, we want somebody kind of unknown because this is a transformative role. Like, we want the female version and the male version to be, convincing because it's someone you haven't necessarily seen before and you don't recognize immediately and go, female person, obviously female.
This is 2014?
Correct.
Yeah.
20 years earlier, you cast Tilda Swinton.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, of course. Yes, obviously, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
But yeah, Sarah did so goddamn well. And
this
I don't know.
One of her first roles. This is maybe her first major role.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. In a film. Wow. So it's really awesome. Like, she does so good.
For the plants her fucking flag.
She does. Really did.
And it's a shame because not many people
don't
know about this movie.
Talk about it the way that they should. But
right.
It's great, actually.
As far as the transformation stuff goes, I think, again, this is to the credit of the movie, I couldn't tell how they did it. Whether it was just like bald cap and then male wig and like put a suit on her and she really changed her body language, or if there was like CGI in her face. I kept looking at her face and she's more like cheekbony and angular when she's the guy. But like, again, I couldn't tell if they did extra stuff.
But it's subtle enough that it's like it was something that was accomplishable. Is what you're
yeah, exactly.
At, like,
and
yeah.
But it was good because, again, it was very clearly her. So you make the connection visually and mentally, like, oh, that's obviously the same person.
Right. It walks the line of distinct yet recognizable.
Yes,
but
exactly.
But also the movie like weirdly deals with the like subtle and they say this explicitly. It's in the text, like talking about the problems with transition, like
my
clothes
practices
don't
her
fit,
voice and stuff
right
yeah, yeah,
my clothes don't fit right, people don't treat me exactly the same, I don't know how to interact, especially in 1960s society.
This is like a legitimately sensitive
portrayal. Generally
they're doing a really good job. Like I can't say it's perfect because of course it's not a lived experience that I can speak to, but like from the outside it looks pretty okay, right?
Yeah.
Like
I saw articles saying the same thing, whether there are articles, and again this is now a nearly 10-year-old movie, mm-hmm. and there were articles that I saw that said this was ahead of the curve as far as like really getting the experience correct and not coming down on one side or the other, just truly portraying this is the shit that you go through if you're doing this thing.
There are some very prominent transgender film critics out there, and I would be interested in seeing if any of them have weighed in on this. Out of curiosity.
There's a lot of extra shit too, with like all the time travel and the circumstances around the transition.
Well, yeah, I know,
like,
but like
it's convoluted. You know,
but still,
like it's just it doesn't feel great to like boil down to like, well, did a trans person think this was okay? But like,
sure.
it's still like as a cis white male,
uh-huh.
like
as we all,
it's a guidepost is a great thing to like.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I, you know, like, I mean, for right now, until I do more research or like find something else, I think that it does a decent job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
Somebody else needs to weigh in, obviously, but from my perspective, things like it's compelling. People. Mm-hmm. People are respecting the way that people have to deal with both society and themselves,
mm-hmm.
yeah. in a really great way. Actually,
one of the things that
even though it's a sci-fi bullshit thing, right? So
sure, yeah. But
well,
like,
that makes it even weirder.
It's not
a movie about
what
sci-fi that.
Bullshit doesn't have like
well,
a true like
well, that's,
critique on
that's
society.
The fucking
sci-fi
point of sci-fi.
Sci-fi
right?
often
exactly.
often
exactly.
handles racism, right? Where it's like,
and,
oh,
like,
if you make aliens and humans the racist thing, then like, oh, we're shining a light on. It's like, okay, but this is like a new interesting take.
I mean, why do you guys think that?
I think it's just the next step of what sci-fi has been doing
for
decades.
Sure. Like, that's what my master's thesis is fucking about. Because that's the thing that I care about.
And what's the
right?
title
In
of that? Just so people can look it up? Or?
Oh.
Kidding. Don't say it.
Yeah.
Is it on JSTOR?
Half of the title is in Russian, so...
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a clue. Okay.
Well, I mean, if anyone listening has access to a university library system, they can look up Seth and my master's thesis, and I'm sure Seth's doctoral dissertation and Zach's doctoral dissertation.
Yeah, mine is very Googleable. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't need a library access thing.
I'm certainly out of any embargo that my home university would have put on mine.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And so like, everybody look up Zach Fart Noise.
Just the Fart Noise.
Lee Fart Noise and Seth Fart Noise for our various theses. Sounds like feces.
Theses and feces, baby. Yeah, what's the difference?
On, I don't know.
Many topics.
Many, many topics.
I'll ask you a question about Sarah Snook's performance. One of the things that I think, and this is like so fucking cliched at this point, I think especially in the last 2 years, this is an especially cliched point. Body language for transformations mm-hmm. seems like it's a fucking superpower. And the thing that I always, and this is not a body language between like a transitioning in terms of gender. So this, I don't mean to make this sound like reduce this in importance, but like the one that I always see cited that I think is just mind blowing is Christopher Reeve in the first Superman movie mm-hmm. and his body language switch between Clark Kent and Superman.
Sure.
And like that, I feel mm-hmm. like in the last 2 years has been drawn out as like the gold standard of like,
sure,
hey, this is an acting performance without words that yeah. people really need to pay attention to. And like, so I'm assuming
yes
it's, Sarah Snook's yeah. body language is like
they literally
crucial to this role.
They literally cover it. I mean, she talks about changing her voice in the movie.
There's an entire scene where
and like, how do I stand like a man kind of thing? And like
right.
That,
there's
so,
there's yeah. maybe a 5 to 10 minute scene where she is learning how to act manly in a 1960s capacity.
She's damn. Looking in the mirror going, hi, I'm John. Hi, I'm John. How are you? I'm John. And
like, hi, yeah. my name is Jane. Hi, my name is Jane.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm John. Like it's yep. it's doing. She's working through it in a
and
in
she
a,
is she's also really natural with this. Like in Succession, she is the most even keeled character, I think, mm-hmm. and she is also really fucking good in Succession at like portraying very subtle disapproval or approval at like
well,
things with like her eyes or her face or
just
whatever. Like
as we've pointed out too, just from like our inability to remember that she is Australian,
yeah.
she is also incredible at very subtle, nuanced voice work.
At doing
much,
at,
also
at,
Greg.
She's doing
Tom is also British. Didn't know that for
Tom
a long
is
time.
British. Yeah. Yeah.
She's
yeah.
doing an American accent spectacularly. Yeah. Anyway.
I think I would argue that Tom's American accent is far more noticeable as a put on.
Yeah. Once you hear his British, you go, oh, okay, yeah.
I mean, once you've watched an episode of Monty Python, but that I think is a pitfall of basically every male British actor since Monty Python came into
sure.
existence. But,
yeah, yeah.
You know,
fair
yeah.
enough.
Except for Benedict Cumberbatch in Power of the Dog, because his put on is such a specific type
well,
of put on.
It's meant to be
that
over the
worked,
top.
That it
yeah.
it really works for me. Yeah, yeah. yeah. yeah.
But another Australian, I want to say,
New Zealand.
She's New Zealand. Yeah, Jane Champion.
She's New Zealand.
Yeah. I thought you meant Cumberbatch. I was like, he's British
for
sure.
No. I yeah. Heart of a Dog, which weirdly I really liked. Even though it was,
I loved
it was a
Power of the Dog.
It was a
yeah.
it was a difficult watch, but
yes,
you know, like I don't know that I could ever like that I could ever love a movie of hers more than I love The Piano. Mm-hmm. Like I know that's pretty like cliched, but it's maybe perfect.
They're all pretty like, brutal. Yeah.
Wait, yeah. Lee. What about the porno parody? I don't know. No, I was gonna do something about
where somebody cuts a dick into pieces and hauls it up a mountain. I don't know.
Yeah,
how does that even work?
I was gonna do something about a 10-inch pianist or something, but like it's fine.
Like,
it's fine. Anyway.
Sure.
Oh my god, when she gives Harvey Keitel the piano keys, oh my god, that fucking destroys.
It's a good movie. It's a good.
Yeah.
movie.
Such a good fucking movie.
So it was Heart of a Dog, and maybe to a lesser
Power
degree
the
from those.
Yeah.
This is pretty good. This
is
a good
movie.
Is
really good. Yeah. yeah.
Sure. Zach, any?
You could tell we haven't recorded in a few weeks.
Yeah, really yeah we've been going for 4.5 hours. Yep.
Think about
no
what you
other...
don't get to hear, listeners.
No other things.
It's almost nothing. We rarely edit anything.
That's true. Yeah. I am done. Should we rate?
Please do.
Okay. On IMDb with...
What a lovely time.
Okay, so this movie... Let's do the money. This movie cost $5 million, as we mentioned. It made $5.4 million, so just barely more. This,
I mean, based on what you're saying, it sounds like it maybe had zero marketing, so maybe it did break
it
even.
It did.
Yeah, in 2014, people just weren't talking about it.
Yes, this movie has 295,000 votes on IMDb, so I don't know where the
interesting
fuck
that came
from.
Yeah, that's
from
a lot.
That is a ton.
People both, like, really love it, and also, like, it was not... Around.
It didn't happen at the time. I have watched this. I realized halfway through that I had seen this movie recently, and I think it has gotten more traction in recent years as opposed to in 2014.
I mean, it's very topical. Yeah. I would wonder if, like, maybe Ethan Hawke and or Sarah Snook have done, like, one of those actors talking about their roles videos on YouTube, which
I could
potentially
see,
could have drawn attention to it.
I could see both of them saying, like, you know, that question, like, what's the movie you like the most, or what do you suggest out of your catalog that people haven't seen? And this would be an obvious choice for sure. Yeah.
Here's another thing that I don't think the three of us really engage with, but I think could be, like, was this a Redbox movie? I think a lot of people, more than we think, rent movies from Redbox, and movies like this end up in Redbox.
In 2014, 2015, I could definitely see that. And, I mean, the short summary kind of seems very appealing. It's like, ooh, that might be an action movie. It might be a, I don't know, like...
Crazy sci-fi mix them up.
Yeah. It's not.
No, not at all.
it's they're like, there's, like...
Heavy.
It's like the kind of sci-fi movie that I really like, and why I appreciate sci-fi as a genre, because
stinky sci-fi.
So much thought put into the screenplay.
Right.
Like,
so I'll just rate stuff, because the original, it is like.
Well, hang on. The IMDb.
IMDb is a 7.4.
7.4, pretty high. With 300,000
so far. Really, just to break in, what I hear, I'm not going to be upset that I lost this week.
I don't know. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. So the original is a 7.4 on IMDb. It's actually a pretty good movie, which is rare for us. But there's like. I don't know. You should just watch it. Like, if you can find it, if you can. And also, I think that it is, like, there's some good commentary and stuff going on there. I think it's...
Seth, you say you should watch it if you can find it. Everyone currently listening to this knows us, so, like, you can find it. we'll give it to you.
Yeah. if you're listening, you know us. We'll put it in the right hands. It's pretty good. Like... It does, like, drown down a little bit, and, like, of course, like, because I'm a sexy super genius, I figured it out in,
That's true, I did
goddamn,
know that about you.
You really did, it was, like, halfway through, or, like, a quarter of the way through, you're like, oh, wait, Jane and the baby and John are the same, and I didn't say anything, and then, like, halfway through, you're like, wait, Ethan Hawke is also Jane, and I was like, still not saying anything. You absolutely nailed it at exactly the right time through the movie.
Well, it was as I was going through. So, like, it does give you the hallmarks that you need, but it's also like it's a worthwhile ride. So I'm gonna give this like a 9. Honestly, it's very, it's very, very good.
As I said, no ill will towards losing this week.
Sure. Yeah. Lee, for your fun Australian romp with like,
oh wait, how did Dick York
it was archival footage we archival put it footage. In to be assholes,
which I didn't even, I don't remember seeing it. I'm sure it was in there, but
that's fine. That was the other obvious option. Yeah. So yeah,
when Sarah Snook was as a housemaid, it was playing in the background.
Sure, makes sense.
Like, it's a throwaway, but it took place, like, that scene took place in 1953 or whatever. Yeah. So, like,
and he got billing because there weren't that many characters, because this movie didn't cost that much money. So
right, and also like Ethan Hawke and or Sarah Snook played like three to seven characters.
Sure.
Regardless, Lee, for your fun Australian romp, which is the thing I always enjoy, I'm going to give you an 8.7.
Okay.
Wow.
That seems
overly generous, no, but I do
dude,
thank you.
I love A Found Family. I love an Australian romp.
I know you do.
Yeah.
I was mostly like, I wrote the thing thinking like, is Zach gonna know what the word dowser refers to? I hope I have to explain dowser.
Wow.
No, totally fair. But yeah, I did know that one. Yeah. Oofers. Original movie, fully agreed. The balance is just great. Again, it strikes the balance of giving away just enough.
Wait, who is Noah Taylor? Was he just like a member
handler in the Temporal Bureau.
Okay, yeah, that's okay.
Maybe the boss of the Temporal Bureau, but like he shows up periodically.
He gives them whatever info we need for the movie to continue.
He puts them on exactly the right course to keep it going. Yeah. And it's clear that he possibly was orchestrating the entire thing.
Definitely.
Because he's the guy in charge of the Temporal Bureau or whatever. But like, All the scenes look good because there's like, you don't need exterior shots. You don't need like weird sci-fi shit. It just...
That's another thing. It's like if you shoot a movie in a room, save a lot of money.
They're
all in rooms. Yeah.
It turns out that humans spend a shit ton of, at least Western, Northern humans tend to spend a lot of time in rooms.
Yeah. Half of this movie takes place in this dive bar. It's like a shot of the bar and a shot of the pool table. That is 50% of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked a lot about Baby Brandon Honeywell before. Possessor is all in rooms. Yeah. If the whole movie is interiors. Right. Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, you're talking about Brandon Honeywell.
No.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't. I didn't realize that.
When you're a little baby, your universe is very small. It's true.
Zach did it the best. Like I'm always the pretender to Zach's throne of the baby man and won't him.
God damn, I'm fucking Macbeth in here.
OG, I'm also gonna give it a 9. If you need a copy, anyone listening, please do contact us because it is definitely worth watching. Super good. Lee, also agreed. Your movie felt like the kind of movie that the world needs right now. Just a little breath of fresh air. A little feel-good time.
Yeah.
Where you kind of see the ending coming, but you're like, man, it was a good ride. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just going to go 8. I think, you know, lost, but only very slightly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, seems good.
Sweet.
Yeah. Don't think we picked out a next one.
Whoopsie Dizzle. Are we going to choose right now?
Fuck that up. Oh, I'm doing a movie called Blind Fury.
This is why I was asking about the timeline of episodes.
Yep, we do have it. I'm doing a movie called Blind Fury, apparently.
Oh. Oh, geez.
Okay.
Right. I forgot about that. All right. Yeah, no, it's happening. Holy shit. Yeah. Blind Fury. Wow.
Love to see it.
Oh,
I guess. Are y'all... I'm sorry, guys.
I'm so excited for this one, actually.
I grabbed my phone because I got a notification. Are y'all seeing Marielle's messages right now? Because it's very fun.
Oh, no. Tell me. Tell me more.
No. We're going to leave that
as...
Is this the thing to do
on the podcast?
Did we get very
well,
far?
Well, we, let's put it this way. Let's do some time travel to the previous episode, Marielle's, and those notifications will make sense.
Much like this movie, Marielle's watching a movie both in the past and the future, I think. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. 2.
That's it. Yeah.
Shit was the cut for sure. Mm-hmm. Oofer doofers. Man, that felt like 16 hours. It was barely 2. Just barely.